Welcome to Directly Speaking, a direct-to-consumer marketers podcast. Our podcast features marketing leaders in the direct-to-consumer and e-commerce space. We get to learn about their brands and the stories behind them, compare notes on trends and challenges in the industry, learn about how they approach their marketing journey, and hopefully a little bit about them personally. I'm your host, Marcus Lancaster, head of e-com and direct-to-consumer strategy at Quad. Today's guest is an exciting one for me, Michael Brandt, CEO and co-founder of Ketone IQ. With the launch of Ketone IQ, Michael and his team created an entirely new category of ketone shots, which have taken over elite sports and high-end workplaces. Michael has quickly scaled the business to a multi-million dollars in revenue, including a $6 million contract with the U.S. Department of Defense. As CEO, Michael is focused on cultivating a world-class team and increasing education and access to metabolic health and performance. Aside from being CEO and co-founder of Health Via Modern Nutrition, he cruises through marathons at a cool six-minute pace. And I have to say, man, 240 is an amazing number, but we'll talk about that later. So let's start off by talking about the brand. Tell us about Ketone IQ and the story behind it.
Yeah. Marcus, great to be here and excited for this conversation. I was a Stanford engineer who got into running, endurance sports. You know, I've done biking and triathlons and all that stuff, and just really loved running and started to look at my own training like an engineer and say, hey, what could I do to pull a lever inside of here to get better? Also big entrepreneur, always been. I was that kid and growing up in Chicago at age 15, like selling glow sticks at the Taste of Chicago, like buying them online. What I don't even know if there was online. You're like calling to buy them in the mail order for 30 cents and selling them for $3. Like, I've always been an entrepreneur, and coming out of college, I was like, all right, I want to take this engineering mindset towards human performance and be an entrepreneur about it. And I looked broadly in this space of human performance and started thinking like, okay, well, what Gatorade did was really cool. I wish I could invent electrolytes. Like, what is that impactful? I want to do something fundamentally inventive and cool, and all the good and the bad and the ugly of, like, you know, it's going to be hard. You're going to have to raise capital, but if you do it, then you get to create a whole new category and you have a whole moat around you. Like, I want to do something really big and interesting in nutrition and human performance, and turned over a lot of stones, looked at a lot of different opportunities, what to look at, and came to ketones because it's something that your body makes already naturally. When you are fasting or starving, or people have maybe heard of the ketogenic diet, you can do a lot of activities and make your body make ketones. Everyone has some ketones in their system already, and they're this really efficient molecule that your brain especially likes. And so I was like, okay, I think if you could make this a shot, you could make a $1 billion company. It is such an incredible fuel that your body makes. Why can't you go to the store and just rip a shot of it the way that you can get like a vitamin C, you know, Vive, gotcha, wellness shot, whatnot. That was the light bulb that went off. And then, you know, was fortunate to, you know, through a lot of hard work and luck, got a $6 million contract with the DOD in 2019. That was our first real customer on it. And that kind of set the train in motion.
It's great timing for the business that you've created, because metabolic health has become such a prominent feature in American life. Yeah. But tell us a little bit more about ketones, because I'm sure that there's some people that are listening don't really have a full understanding beyond what a ketogenic diet is.
Ketones are a molecule that contains energy. The same way that sugar has energy inside of it, ketones have energy inside of them. Your body makes ketones all the time. So you actually make ketones from fat. You turn fat into ketones, and your brain especially loves ketones. It's a new type of energy. You can stack it with caffeine. Caffeine works pretty differently, but they stack together really well and it works nicely. Or you can have ketones on their own. It's a new form of energy, and yeah, it feels really nice. If people describe it like a low dose Adderall or energy, or a runner's high in a bottle. And that's what a ketone is. It's basically a new form of energy that feels really nice.
One of the things you had to do in addition to creating your brand is understand and develop who your target audience is. How did you go about doing that?
A lot of hypothesis testing. And I love D2C for my type of business, where it's very inventive, there is no market. We're making a market. We are ketone.com. We are at ketone on Instagram. Like, it's imagine like starting at electrolyte or at protein. Like, there is no market for what we're doing. We're adjacent to other markets. Like, we're adjacent to other wellness products or other energy products, but it's very new. And I love D2C for that because of the data and the feedback loops that you get on your whole stack, what ads are resonating, what audiences are resonating, what talking points, what landing pages. I don't need to tell you and your audience, like, there's just an amazing toolkit that you get online that you don't get in a store where you're, hey, I think that young, fresh out of college athletic people will like my product. Or no, I think aging, you know, middle-aged, older folks who are trying to, you know, take their health really seriously are going to be into my product. Like, those are two very different hypotheses, and there's hypotheses inside of those hypotheses of like, how do you even target those audiences, demographics the best, that it's going to take you like 3 years to test that in retail. And you're probably, if you get it wrong, you're going to get discontinued. And it's like, Target is like, okay, you effed up on your initial positioning. Why don't you try launching again? No, you're like discontinued for 3 years. So whereas on e-commerce, it's like, oh, I don't know, put $500 behind some ads and they didn't work, or they did work. Follow the water down the mountain, like go where it's going and double down into what's working. So, you know, D2C toolkit has been awesome. Well, I mean, what we found at the end of the day, where the product currently is it's a lot of like our bullseye customers, you know, 40 to 60 year old trends male. And it tends to be, you know, high household income and someone who like cares about health and fitness. Like, they're going to the gym a few times a week and they're looking at their body as an asset, and like the other assets in their portfolio, they're trying to optimize it. That's our bread and butter consumer.
Your narrative is fascinating because that is one of the big benefits of e-com and D2C in general, is your ability to pivot on the fly and learn and adjust quickly. And I'm not entirely surprised by your audience, but I'll ask the question, is that different than you originally anticipated when you started?
It actually is. Yeah. When I started the business, I was in my 20s and I was like, oh yeah, everyone, like, I'm just selling to myself. And I'm still like a little bit on the young side of what the demo is. Like, I'm a new dad. I'm 36. So I'm like, I'm a lot closer to the demo than I was before. And when I started, I was thinking, oh yeah, it's a lot of like, you know, young, let's get the like young Gen Z TikTok. Let's get those people going. Like, you know, youth drives the next waves of culture. And it's like a lot, you know, there's every hypothesis sounds true when you write it on paper. Like, you should test hypotheses that you think are good.
Right.
What ends up happening ultimately is like the person who's down to really invest, who has the interest and the, you know, discretionary dollars in their pocket, it tends to just skew older. So you got to be smart. You got to be willing to, you know, hypothesis test. And there can't be any sacred cows. I think you have to take things seriously, but not too seriously. Like, you have to take things seriously for enough time to express the bet and then be willing to completely walk away from it, do a 180 and try something else completely. So like, you can't not be serious about the hypotheses you're testing. You actually have to like channel it. Like, how would I, like, I really think this is the direction of the company. Let me put together let me work with the best partners with the best authenticity in this space. Let me make the best creative. Let me run the best possible ad stack. And you have to really, really mean it and like try it. And if it doesn't work, try again and try again. And at a certain point, you have to be like, okay, I've tried. Like it's not this hard to make money. Like, I need to bang my head in on a different door. Like, this is not working. Let me go try the next market. Some people get lucky. The first one they try is awesome. At the end of the day, like at a certain scale, once you're doing like, you know, 8 figures plus revenue, like whatever your initial segment is, like you're going to start churning out, you're going to start exhausting that market. And you're going to have to go through this process of audience testing, finding new verticals, finding new stacks of, you know, partners and creative and talking points. So you're best off baking that into your muscle sooner rather than later, developing muscle as a founder, if you don't already have it, hiring people with that muscle, developing that muscle on your team of people who are just really good at hypothesis testing, and you know, everything is an experiment, and you can't expect to be right on the first thing. The most important thing is the speed at which you test hypotheses.
This is great. And you're right about speed. I love that. A lot to unpack there. Let's start with what are some things that surprised you about connecting with your target audience and what are some things that maybe didn't work so well?
You really got to focus on partners that ads alone don't work in the modern context. I've seen that, like, an ad that has Ben Greenfield in it or Andrew Huberman in it or someone who's just like a trusted authority in the space just like significantly outperforms a ad that comes from us as the brand that's saying, hey, like, trust us. This exact same words or, you know, concept can come out of the lips of someone else. But if that someone else has, like, you know, spent the last decade, 2 decades building their platform, building their trust, building their ethos in the space, that it just super outperforms. Like, you want to find your best partners and, like, really lock in with them. And that wasn't obvious to me at the start. I was like, yeah, like, I could see those ads performing a little bit better, but, you know, it's going to be more expensive, right? Like, you got to pay, sure. You got to pay to work with these people. Like, is it going to be worth it? And it's like, yeah, it's actually, like, super worth it. It's like, you're, for us, like, you're better partner, like, the expense that's associated with running a partnership stack to make your creative better outperforms just, you know, sitting down with my designer or my head of creative and, like, making the best ad, but it's still, you know, a branded ad. Like, it just doesn't hit the same way. So that, I would say, biggest surprise, learning lesson: people who have a trusted platform will just massively accelerate the speed at which you can get your message out there. For a brand like ours, for me, I have to really bring people up to speed on what a ketone even is and how it matches this, you know, the fact that people have a, you know, energy demand in the day, and, you know, energy is the most important problem that you're thinking about, really. Cause, like, if you can solve your energy, then you can solve all your other problems in your day. I got to, like, create this market and educate people to where, like, I need to inject that message somehow. And going through partners is really important. Cause I can't just be like, hey, here's a new wallet with better features. Like, yes, it's a better mousetrap.
Because yeah. You have such, you have to develop an understanding of the brand at a very macro level.
Yep.
And I totally understand. The interesting thing about the influencer combat, that given the fact that you skew upper income, you know, kind of call it 40, 60, call middle-aged guys. I'm one of them. That audience is not one that typically we think of as being very moved by the influencer community.
It's a whole wide world out there. Like, I don't think it's, you know, this homogenous influencer community, right? There's a big difference between Alex Earle and Andrew Huberman.
Sure.
And, you know, everyone's on their phone all the time. I wouldn't say, you're like Gen Z esports influencer. That's like a very different type of influencer than, you know, the person that's writing reviews on $10,000 road bikes. And
right.
it just depends who you're trying to get in front of. And so, yeah, not all influencers are the same. And you gotta get in front of the influencers that are talking to your people.
Great. And so did you select all those yourselves or how'd you go about making those partnerships?
Yeah, we do partnerships internally. We have a VP of partnerships and a whole team under her. And for us, it's been super effective just because partnerships are special. Like, one of our partners just set the world record for most pull-ups in 24 hours.
Yeah.
This absolute stud, Truett Haynes. And he, you know, I was there. Like, I was there up all night, 24 hours, just like rooting him on. He's like taking shots at Ketone IQ. And he did 10,000. I mean, just a sidebar. It was insane. Like, you know, you're a rock climber. You know what it feels like to do 6 pull-ups.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can do way more. Like, he did basically 6 pull-ups every 30 seconds for the first, like, half of that. And he slowed down a little bit. But, it was an insane clip, any way you measure it. And I'm there with him, right? So, like, I'm there. I'm making some content. He's making, like, interviewing him afterwards. He's hyped up. I'm getting him hyped up. Like, we're doing a testimonial, right? So it's not the kind of thing where I can just have, like, my people, my agency talk to his agency and, like, do a deal and, like, let's inject a dynamic ad into your podcast. It's like, no, like, it's so much more home brewed than that, at least at the scale that we're at. And I got a big part of my job, honestly, is getting out there with partners and even just for my team as well, like, being there, building the warmth, building the connection, like, working on actual, like, fun, creative, collaborative stuff together. A lot of our partners are like relatively athletic. Like half my partnerships meetings, I'm like going on a jog with them, or we're like rucking up some hill and like talking shop or like shooting content. Like, and you can't fake it. Like if we were a golf brand, I would say like, I'd be out there golfing all the time, right? Like I know the gal who started Beyond Yoga and sold that to Levi's, and like just doing yoga all day. Like you're just meeting all the other yogis out there. Like you gotta, it's at a certain, you know, I don't know at what scale this even drops off. I think maybe you're into your Fortune 500 business. You can't do that anymore. CEO of Red Bull, probably not snowboarding all the time, but someone on his team probably is
all the time. But
like, I think it has to be in your culture. I think you gotta be like it in there authentically.
Well, I think it's just hard. You're looking for it. Yeah. Is authenticity. It's about authenticity. And you are so, and these people are so synonymous with exactly what your brand is about. That's what makes cultivating those partnerships personally so important to you.
That's right.
Love that. All right. I want to get to some of that personal stuff here in a minute, but a couple more questions for you about the brand and how you approach marketing. What's something that didn't work for you that hasn't?
You know, one thing that is just still confounds me that I think should work but hasn't worked is sending out samples of our product in mass. That we've tried a few different things. Like for instance, let's look at, you know, there's websites that'll show every 10K going on in a state, in the state of California, state of Texas, state of Kentucky this month. And we've tried like, okay, this month we're going to send out 50,000 samples to every turkey trot or 10K or whatever. And then we look at our post-purchase survey and like doesn't register. And that continues to be a head scratcher. You hear a lot about, you know, sampling being the best possible dollar you can spend. So my best sense on it is just that like we're still, you know, online, we're still within somewhat of a niche of people that really like are going to click with our product. But when you start like blasting out to, you know, turkey trots, you're getting a lot of noise. And online, you can, you know, your meta algorithm can like find your people really easily. And there's millions of them. To answer your question, like what haven't we figured out yet? I would say sampling has been a surprising, hasn't worked yet.
Thank you for that. I would have anticipated that to be successful, especially if you chose the right events.
Just thinking live about it, that like, you know, our website's really good at converting people. And we like recently have updated our packaging and like, maybe we should retry. Cause for instance, you know, RX Bar, they were never selling online. Their packaging was just so freaking good. Like RX Bar is just like S tier packaging.
I totally
like,
know what you're saying. Quality.
Like I pick it up and I'm like, okay, it's got some eggs and some dates and some whatever. Like I know what I'm getting, like Halo top, you know, S tier packaging. Like there's certain brands that do so well in sampling. Cause like their packaging is just the best possible ad unit for what the product is. I think our best ad unit for the product is our ad unit, is our like Facebook ad unit or our podcast ad. Because we've been such a D2C business and that's what we've cranked 8 figures into and like polished every possible part of the stone. And so that's what's really good. I think our packaging, you know, realistically, someone's already bought from us online. Someone's already bought from us. Like they're already a converted customer before they see our packaging. So our packaging in the past, I think, was probably good, not great, because it didn't have to be great. What had to be great was our Facebook ad. And so then when we go, I'm just learning stuff on the fly here. Like as we go and give samples out to people, they're like, I'm not moved by your packaging. We have recently updated it, and it's a good hypothesis for why another push into sampling could make a lot more sense.
Good conversation. All right. What about CRM and retention? Is that something that works well for you? And what are some of the tactics you're using to do that?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of email and we think about social media as a retention tool as well. It's really important to have that continuity of messaging from when someone joins. You know, we have a dedicated like launch sequence with someone, like onboarding them to the product, making sure they're using it well, making sure, you know, the worst thing is that I think we've all like gotten really high buying temperature to buy a product online and then it comes in the mail and like, we don't like actually use it. It like sits around for a little while. It collects dust. Like my mission, our mission with our retention is like, well, first of all, get someone to use it within 24 hours of when it shows up at their door. So like hype people up as soon as they place the order, hype people up as it's arriving, get people really using it. That first month is just super, it's this golden window. And the golden window starts before the package even arrives. And then from there, it rolls into more like broadcast. Like, hey, let's get, make sure people know that like the same thing that they're subscribed to is powering world record breaking pull-up competitions. And we're doing this and that, like, let people know what they're a part of, that they're part of something bigger, that we're an energy science company and that we are doing incredible stuff out there in the world. Have people feel like they're part of a movement, having people feel like, don't build a brand, build a cult. Like, have people feel like they're in.
Love on that line.
Yeah. Yeah. Have people feel like they're in on something, like they're in on the big secret that like no one else really knows yet.
Very cool. I love that line. I'm going to steal it.
Hell yeah. I stole it from somewhere too. Like it's a banger.
Yeah. Yeah. Killer. All right. Last marketing question would be, what's next? What's the next mountain for you to climb? You know, is there a new challenge with scale? You know, what are you working on?
The next mountain to climb is omnichannel, that D2C continues to scale. And I'm confident that we will continue to maintain that scaling factor. At the same time, we're stacking on retail is just, you know, let's scale in two channels at once. And so we went from sub 1,000 doors last year to over 3,000 by the end. We launched nationwide at Vitamin Shoppe, and we're in Sprouts, and we're in a lot of Wegmans and Gelson's, and a lot of really cool HEB out in Texas. We're in a lot of really great grocery stores, and we have a lot more to come. And just figuring out that balance, figuring out the attribution gets really tough, right? Because like, if people see an ad, but like, you know, some amount of your conversions are happening in retail, right? It's like, you get a little bit of a dip in D2C conversion because people are buying, they're seeing your ad. Your ad is working, but they're buying it at Vitamin Shoppe, and you don't necessarily get that like last click attribution. And so it's solvable, but it just requires more math, more attention, more analytics to figure out how your dollar is actually impacting the bottom line.
That's a great call, because we run into this a lot of times with brands. You know, they kind of hit a threshold and they start to enter a bunch of different stores, and, you know, attribution models become challenging. So you really have to shift your measurement models to incrementality to determine what's working and what's not.
That's really well said.
Let's talk about you. Sometimes I take this when I'm talking to somebody, I like to pivot in this case to how you ended up in the role you're in. It sounds like your personal passions really dovetailed with your entrepreneurial nature. Tell us a little bit about how you got into working out and all that stuff.
It started out as a way to just blow off stress, and then doing it more and more. And then I had a friend who was like, hey, why, you know, the San Francisco half marathon is coming up. You want to run it? And I was like, sure. I think I could do that. And then I always had this idea. I always knew about the Boston Marathon and that it was this like more elite qualifying field. Sure. And that in order to get invited to the Boston Marathon, you have to run a sub 3-hour marathon. And I was like, all right, can I do a half marathon in under an hour and a half? So I'm like, you know, halfway there, so to speak. Although, you know, I think running a full marathon is about three times as hard as running a half marathon.
I believe it.
Yeah. From there, I just got really into it. I liked having a purpose behind my training. I was, you know, reasonably motivated to go to the gym a few times a week. But once it was like, oh, I have a goal, and I like, if I miss a day of training, I'm falling behind on my goal, I just found it really motivating. And then it was this positive feedback loop where like, okay, well, actually when I get after it in the morning, I just feel really good all day.
100%. First thing I do every day. And if I don't, my day is not the same.
I'm off kilter. It's like I never woke up. Yeah. So yeah, we're cut from the same cloth in that way. It's a really important part of my stack, my energy. And it's crazy because I think a lot of people are like not waking up. Were you climbing every morning or doing like
for me, I do. I work out 6 days, 3 days of lifting, 3 days of running, and then I climb 3 days at night.
Wow. So you're doing two a days. You're doing 9 workouts a week.
Yeah. You know, it's whenever I can, unless I'm traveling for work. You know, hey, it just keeps me sane. My wife would tell you that anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. You don't want to meet the version of me that's that hasn't gotten in a workout in a day or once it starts being a few days, it's like, isn't it? It's no good. And I think it's good, right? It's like this analogy for everything in business where like your business is problem solving. Business is looking at obstacles and being excited about them, because what is an obstacle if not a way to get further out ahead of your competition in the market? Like you should want to solve hard problems. And that's that same ethic that you have as a runner or a climber, where you, a normal person, they see a mountain, they're like, let me go around that. Like, I don't want to do that. You see a mountain, you're like, hey, like, what's the line? What's the, that's a problem to solve. See a mountain and I'm like, yeah, let me run up that thing. Like, and having that attitude is day and night different for just a good attitude for work. I think you have to be that way as an entrepreneur. You have to be like, yeah, if we get good at climbing this mountain, then there's an even bigger mountain over there that we can climb, you know, next time, and we'll get even better. We'll progress. And having that attitude, I just think is so important as a entrepreneur and as a leader, that having that just direct analogy of doing something hard that you feel in your bones and your brain knows that you just like moved your body 10 miles today. You carry that energy in a lot of ways throughout the rest of your day that I think are very impactful, especially as your team grows. And you know, a lot of my role has evolved from being the direct one solving problems to kind of like inspiring people, firing people up to solve problems. It's like, I don't know. Yeah. If your CEO ran 10 miles this morning, like hopped on a call and is like super energetic and like has all these ideas and is excited about the opportunity ahead, it's like, doesn't that get, could you kind of fire? I would get fired up.
We do hard things because doing hard things is infinitely more satisfying than doing easy things. And I think you actually even said on, Lift Run Shoot that it doesn't have to be fun, and I totally agree with that line, because that's life. It's like hitting the hammer. You have to hit that nail, and sometimes if the nail's not going anywhere, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's in, and it's those 52 times you hit it before, and that is what exercise is about.
Yep. Yeah, you keep showing up, and then all of a sudden, you have this breakthrough. And it's this 7-year overnight success or what have you. I like your point about doing hard things, because my first job out of college, I worked at YouTube at kind of early days after they got acquired by Google. And I remember one thing that Larry Page, who was the CEO at the time, said, which was that basically everything that you're working on becomes difficult. There's just problems inside of everything. And you might as well be working on something that is really a big deal that will make a dent in the world that you'll be really proud of, because everything's going to end up being a grind. Like you're all in it. Like you're just staring at your computer at, 5 in the morning, 7 at night, whatever. Like you're jamming on stuff. You're in meetings. You're like redoing the edit to the edit to the edit to the thing. It's like, you might as well be doing something that you're really stoked on. That's hard. But the gold at the end of the rainbow is really worth it, because everything's hard. Everything becomes hard. So you might as well work on something that's like really hard and that has a really big goal on the other side. Cause like even the easy quote unquote problem ends up becoming, everything just becomes hard. And so like you work on the thing that's worth it.
The fact that you just ran 10 miles this morning makes the rest of it nothing.
Yeah.
How old were you when you started running?
In a serious way, I was like 27.
Got it.
So about 10 years.
Back to work. The one question, what are some things that you've, what are some additional parallels maybe that you've drawn that from your exercise regimen or from your challenge to get to 240 or whatever that also apply to work? Any other lessons?
Yeah. I mean, so many. One just top of the list is that this idea of train hard, win easy, that to run 6-minute miles for a marathon, it's actually not that hard to do. The hard part is the 1,000 miles that you run in training to get there. And a younger version of me, I would see a hard task and I would like rally really hard. I would like pull all nighters. I would just sprint, get it done, burn, and get it done. And then kind of crash out from there. Yes. And what I've matured into is that like you can actually just set up a system And that can include also bringing other people into the fold and building a team around it and setting up a system where you get up every day, you do the thing. No one workout as a marathoner makes you a hero or a zero. It's the consistent daily grind. Like, I do a hard workout like a couple of times a week, and mainly I'm just like showing up, chopping wood, carrying yes. water. When I first got into running, by the way, it was like a 2 mile run. It was like, I built to this. Like, it was like sure. showing up, doing, getting a couple miles, like leaving a little gas in the tank so that tomorrow I want to go and do it again. And I could do it again. And bring that analogy into work where I'm not like trying to be a hero. I'm not trying to like get the webpage launched or like launch the new product or like sprint on this hiring process and get it to like pull all nighters. It's like you spend the time setting up the process, and then you have the compounding daily discipline of following the process. And then the end result just like falls out almost automatically. And it's like, it's easier than you think to get the win on race day if you've just shown up and done the hard part of the discipline and the process.
I could not agree more that there are so many lessons in that consistent discipline that are too often lost in our society today. So many people I interact with, I wish that they had the opportunity to, you know, embrace that kind of success, because it's addicting. As soon as you accomplish something that you couldn't do 6 months ago, you're like, it's just a high that is unmatched.
It feels like it's getting worse, doesn't it? Like, people's attention windows shortening and less of a, you know, long-term view. Everyone sees all these wins. You open up your phone, you just see like a million wins happening. It's like, oh wow, like that looked easy. Like, oh, that guy just went to the pull-up bar and did 10,000 pull-ups in 24 hours. Like, dude, like that guy's been training since he was like 7. Like, he just got fixated on David Goggins and doing pull-ups yeah. for like his entire, that's been his entire life. And so like what comes across as like a 30-second viral reel on Instagram, it's like, yo, that took decades. Like, that person who rung the bell on the New York Stock Exchange, like,
and how much adversity did he overcome to get there?
And no one wants to do that. Like, everyone wants to be a champ, but no one wants to be a champ. Like, no one yeah. wants to do the dirty work in silence and, you know, no appreciation and like, you know. And then there's this weird middle zone where, like, you know, I think when you first get started on things, people are like, yeah, cool, like nice, like, yeah, yeah, you're pretty good for a beginner, and like everyone's welcoming you in, slapping you, oh, congrats on, you know, oh cool, you're getting into golf, cool. But then there's this spot in the middle where you're like trying really hard, you're like you're trying, but you're like not good yet. And so you have this kind of image of like, okay, this guy tries really hard at this thing and is kind of like mid or like not even good
yep.
at the thing. And it can be really damaging on your ego if you're worried about the external perception. You just got to focus back on the process. And that's, you just got to know. I mean, I read a lot of autobiographies, biographies, like everyone spends a lot of time in that like dark ages. Like Kobe Bryant spent a lot of time just like being so at basketball and just being really in his head and like working on it until you're really good. And then it's like, oh wow, like everyone wants to be really good, but no one wants to go through that, like just the sheer work and the sheer ego bruise of trying really hard at something and not being good at it yet.
That's why sports like running and climbing are addicting to me personally, because the rock doesn't change. And I may have had no chance of setting this line 2 years ago, but I can do it now. And when that happens, again, it comes back to, I've overcome adversity. I've stuck with it. I've put the hours in, and look at what I got as a result.
That's so cool. Yeah. I am a big advocate of some kind of sports. I don't care what it is, but some kind of physicality, because we're all just advanced chimps. The ability to like feel yourself, see yourself doing something physical, plants things in your brain that give you confidence into everything else that you're going to do in your day. It's just like very like simple, controlled version. Business is the final frontier. Business has so many different levers to it, right? It's the
yes.
it's the game of all games, and it's really complex. You can go in a lot of different ways. You're staring into the abyss, and you got to go create value for your shareholders.
rock climbing is a lot more constrained. Running is a lot more constrained. Basketball is a lot more constrained. Golf is a lot more constrained. It's, you know, 18 holes, hit ball into hole better than you did before. Yes. Like it's more constrained, but in that way it's easier to focus on, and it's easier to feel that sense of progress that then I think like it acts as training wheels to go and play the bigger game, which is
business.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very simple, but that doesn't make it easy to be successful at those kind of things.
That's so well said. And the difference between simple and easy being that, yeah, simple is run 10 miles every day. That's one sentence. Not easy. Go work out.
Or you're waking up and you don't want to get out of bed or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like that. Like I think simple is good because if you can write it on a post-it note and put it on your monitor, and you can tell your wife, husband about your goal, and everyone knows that that's your thing. It's your bio on Twitter and whatever. Like simple is good. I like simple. I like that. It like set goals that are simple but hard. I like that in terms of goal setting. That's a good way to put it.
Great interview. Thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it. If somebody wants to get hold of you, what's a good way to do it?
Yeah. Active on everything, on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. Find me. I'm at Michael D. Brandt. My brand is called Ketone IQ. You can find us at ketone.com or at Ketone on social media. Love hearing from people. If people have ideas or questions or intros or what have you, just drop a line. It's called social media for a reason.
Awesome. Michael, you've been such a great guest. I'm so thankful for you giving me the time today, and I'm really looking forward to keeping in touch with you.
Thank you, Marcus. And yeah, thanks everyone for listening in. This is a lot of fun.
And thank you for joining us on Directly Speaking today. We hope you enjoyed the content, and we hope to have you with us next time. Have a great day, everybody.